This is a Building Bridges, your community and labor report special. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
The Union of Unemployed in Iraq, founded in May 2003, emerged as the first significant and mass initiative by Iraqi workers to confront the wide-scale unemployment caused by the U.S. war. Within a few months, the Union of Unemployed signed up 150,000 members.
Jobs or unemployment benefit became the union's battle cry. In addition, it demanded a significant role in job distribution. The Union of Unemployed in Iraq became a world-renowned radical working-class organization for its 45-day sit-in protest across from the American Command headquarters in Baghdad, despite continuous attacks and repression by the American forces.
And now, Issam Shukri, Iraqi labor organizer and a founder of the Union of Unemployed in Iraq, describes the organization of the working class under Saddam Hussein's Ba'athist Party.
The workers were very aware of their class distinction and their class struggles all along, and they started to do strikes as early as the 20s in the 20th century. A lot of factories, workers have been striking, and even in 1968, when the Ba'ath regime came, Saddam Hussein was young then, but he was the most vicious personality among the Ba'ath fascists. So he was personally in charge of suppressing a general strike that occurred in the food oil industry workers, and many, many workers' leaders were executed and butchered by the fascist pan-Arab movement. Throughout the rule of the Ba'ath regime, which was heavily supported by the CIA for the first time and before switching the places, the workers have suffered a great retreat due to the venturous policies of the Ba'ath regime through the war with Iran, or through the sheer suppression against the workers, imprisoning them, oppressing their rights of strike or association. So the workers were really suffering under the Ba'ath regime, and they've been under a huge torture and oppression. The fact is that the U.S., and if we go back in memory to the years when the U.S. was supporting Saddam Hussein and considered as an ally, considered as a moderate element in the Middle East and an element of stability, the U.S. government exactly knew that this man and his philosophy and his regime was the main suppressor of the working class movement in Iraq that had a brilliant history throughout the 40s, 50s, and 60s of last century. And Arab nationalism was encouraged and supported by the U.S., as Islamism and radical and political Islam is supported now, to lead to the same kind of oppression for the working people of Iraq. So Saddam has been the torture of Iraqi workers, and under him, thousands of workers died or perished because of his brutal policies.
We asked Issam Shukri about the formation of the Union of Unemployed and other working class union federations in Iraq.
The Union of the Unemployed in Iraq was formed May 1st, 2003, after the fall of Saddam's regime caused by the invasion of the U.S. forces. A group of people, and I was among them, the conditions of the Iraqi workers was so forceful, we even thought about establishing an active union for the workers who actually work. But the conditions then was very depressive in terms of the massive unemployment caused by the destruction of war from one side and the lack of security from the other that prevented workers to go out to work or look for work or seek any form of normality. The war that has been launched, the vicious war, the destruction, the deprivation that the war has created to the Iraqi people, has left thousands upon thousands of Iraqi workers unemployed. Even before Saddam's fall, They had little trivial jobs. Now they found themselves, after the collapse of the economy, out in the streets, some of them without even a shelter to protect them and their families. Now, this is a direct outcome of the barbaric policies that the U.S. has been following on Iraq since the first Gulf War and then the 13 years of sanctions on the people of Iraq. It's a continuation of the same scenario that has started then. So the UUI was formed upon a very basic demand from the U.S. authority in Iraq, which is providing jobs for the workers or unemployment benefit of $100 a month. This was the main issue that the UUI has been struggling to get, and accordingly we run about 13 demonstrations to the CPA, which is the U.S. Civil Administration inside Iraq, and we run a 46 days sit-in strike in front of the CPA. We put up a tent, and we had thousands of people showing the support for us. I dare to say that we altered the political atmosphere that the U.S. was trying to impose on the people of Iraq, the reactionary atmosphere of religious hatred and national divisions and ethnic divisions. We turned that scene into a scene of class struggle between the oppressed and the poor and the unemployed and the few political reactionaries and their supporter, the U.S., and became on every house in Iraq. They started to talk about this struggling union. However, the struggle of the UUI did not reach a final conclusion through the procrastination of the U.S. representatives that I personally have dealt with. They made a lot of promises in order to delay and try to push us down and fragment our rallies and fragment our will. But we were persistent, and after a long 46 days, we decided that we pull out of the negotiations with the U.S. and seek new forms of struggle. We're still demonstrating inside Iraq, but we have made our struggle on a different platform. We have founded, along with the UUI, another organization, the Federation of Iraqi Councils and Unions, which is gaining the support of some of the radical labor movement. We are putting forward our demands to the international community, to the ILO, for instance, the International Labor Organization, of how suppressive the governing council has been and how suppressive the U.S. has been against the Iraqi workers. We wanted to expose that, and we are doing this along with all other radical people and progressives in Iraq. This movement is ongoing. This movement is gaining support. We are entering every neighborhood inside of Iraq. We want to lift that idea, that attack that the U.S. wants to put on the Iraqi people, which is a society divided by religion, Shiites and Sunnis. We want to say that the cause of workers of Iraq is a hot issue, and it's a pressing issue, and we will still struggle until our demands of a better labor code is implemented rather than the backward code that the regime has put in place for workers and is still on, which deprives the workers of Iraq the simplest forms of protest, like strike or the freedom of association, not to mention the freedom of speech. So we are struggling on all fronts, the political one as long as the economic front of struggle.
And now, Assam Shoukry addresses the potential for continuing the organizing and the development of working class organization.
We don't have a choice but to struggle. We cannot allow capital to rule Iraq, to oppress the workers in Iraq. We are not pessimistic because we believe the world has changed now. If you see the demonstrations that occurred before the war all across the world, you would understand that there is a third alternative, the people's alternative, that is opposing the viciousness and the atrocities that the war is creating. And we are relying on these forces. I'm here today in the U.S. to promote the cause of Iraqi workers, to seek the solidarity of the U.S. workers with the Iraqi workers, and to tell them that there is no democracy in Iraq that Bush or any of the ruling elite in Washington are claiming. What there is in Iraq is another form of dictatorship, but it is replaced from probably one person into many persons with a backup of the one of the strongest military machines in the world. So we should get the support and we should reach out to the working class, because we believe the working class strength in its organization. So that's what we are doing. We are organizing the working class to be self-conscious of its potential strength, and that's what we are doing. And in that role, we are determined to push forward with our cause. But we need the support of the U.S. labor unions, progressive people, women organization. We need them, because otherwise the U.S. forces are much stronger than us. The reactionaries are and the capitalists are much stronger than us. They would probably have the upper say in the end. Without an international solidarity and without the working class of Iraq form themselves politically, there would be no advancement. But I am personally optimistic, because we already been able to make differences in Iraq, and we are still fighting for a better future in Iraq.
You've been listening to Assam Shukri, labor organizer and a founder of the Union of Unemployed in Iraq. As the progressive movement in the U.S. struggles to end the U.S. occupation of Iraq, we must extend our full support to Iraqi workers and their struggle for freedom and equality. To find out more about how you can support Iraq's unions, go to the U.S. Labor Against the War website at www.uslaboragainstwar.org. That's www.uslaboragainstwar.org.
And now, David Rovix.
We've got a situation and it calls for a solution that upholds our domination of the planet. We're gonna make our case and we're gonna make it well. And if you don't like our logic, you can can it. We'll use impeccable intelligence from any country in the world, as long as we all see eye to eye. And if we don't find quite what we need, we know what to do. Just look into the camera and lie. It's Operation Iraqi Liberation. Tell me, what does that spell? Operation Iraqi Liberation. O-I-L. And we'll lie about the missiles and the nuclear research. We'll lie about uranium. We'll build military bases and smile for reporters as we give away bubble gum. And we'll lie about Bin Laden, his connections with the Saudis. We'll lie about 9-1-1. And we'll lie about the Baathists, their connections to Al-Qaeda, because we know there's none. It's Operation Iraqi Liberation. Tell me, what does that spell? Operation Iraqi Liberation. O-I-L. We'll lie about the North Koreans and we'll lie about Iran and don't mention Israel. Keep those nuclear weapons out of this song. It'll all hold together swell. Now we'll liberate these people, we'll liberate their money, we'll liberate their soil. We'll liberate their airports, we'll liberate their harbors, and we'll liberate their oil. Operation Iraqi Liberation. Tell me, what does that spell? Operation Iraqi Liberation. O-I-L. Operation Iraqi Liberation. Tell me, what does that spell? Operation Iraqi Liberation.
This is a Building Bridges, your community and labor report special. There are many that say even though the original reasons for invading Iraq have now been demonstrated to be mistakes or deliberate fabrications, since we're there we have no choice but to stay. Surely we'll do our best to leave Iraq a better place than before, endowed with a new democracy and a free market economy to bring prosperity to the people. And this perspective has currency amongst members of the present Republican regime and Democratic Party nominees for the presidency, as well as many members of the public at large.
Tariq Ali, author of Bush in Babylon and The Clash of Fundamentalism, has in the international forum aggressively denounced the United States' sanctions of invasion and occupation of Iraq. Mr. Ali spoke recently at the Judson Memorial Church in Manhattan. As he points out in today's Building Bridges report, we should not be surprised by the fierce armed opposition to our presence in Iraq.
But let's hear directly from Tariq Ali to continue to debunk the mythology of United States altruism in Iraq and to reiterate the need for all of us to participate in the March 20th Global Day of Action on the one-year anniversary of the U.S. bombing and invasion of Iraq to say no to war and to bring the troops home now.
And now, Tariq Ali.
Before this war began, we said there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. We said Saddam Hussein had no links with Al-Qaeda. And virtually the entire mainstream press in this country denounced us as fantasists, apologists for Saddam Hussein, etc. Well. And when the weapons of mass destruction weren't found, and the intelligence agencies, which had always warned that it would be difficult to find them, were blamed for faulty intelligence, when they were only being put under massive pressure by the politicians to find the evidence so that they could go to war. And the politicians lied to convince a skeptical public to go to war, which was agitated by arguments that these weapons existed, that they posed a threat to the security of the United States. And it's very dangerous when elected political leaders lie in that fashion. And outside the United States, no one believed that there were links between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda, because anyone who knows that part of the world knows the deep hostility between the predominantly secular Baathist tradition and religious groups in that part of the world. And when your great thinker president was confronted recently on Meet the Press, what did he say? He said, okay, so maybe there aren't any weapons of mass destruction, but Saddam Hussein, he said, was a madman and we had to deal with him. Bush should be careful what he says, because it establishes a very bad precedent that if any country can decide that the ruler of another country is a madman or a madwoman and then go to war, where would we end up? And it's a dangerous way of proceeding. Now we have a new situation. Britain and the United States went to war on false premises. They had to find some way of explaining how this represented a threat, because otherwise it was in violation of every single international law and in violation of the United Nations Charter, which explicitly prohibits preemptive strikes, and the only basis on going to war is self-defense. That's why they needed the weapons of mass destruction. But now we have an occupation, and some of us again warned that if you occupy a sovereign, independent Arab state, despite the fact that a majority of the population may not like or may even loathe its ruler, they will resist. And we pointed out that this was especially true in Iraq, which had been occupied by the British for 30 years, and there was a whole tradition of resistance. And that is why the occupying armies and their ideologues got a shock when they landed in Iraq. They were not welcomed with sweets and flowers. That was the promise made to Bush in the Oval Office by a group of House Arabs. Well, these House Arabs should be summoned back to the White House and say, where are your sweets and flowers? How come they didn't come? Not even in Basra, not even in Najaf and Karbala, southern cities where there was real hostility and anger against Saddam Hussein. And now the United States confronts a very serious problem. There is an armed resistance, and this resistance no longer exists just in the so-called Sunni triangle. It exists also in the south. The big decision hasn't been made by the Shia leaders when they're going to join, and there's big rivalry between them. So they could start if they feel that their demands are being frustrated by the occupation. The position which is untenable, people who supported the war, I can understand why they support the occupation. But those who opposed the war but support the occupation, that is an illogical, irrational position. We didn't support the war, but now that we are there, let's stay and do some good. But the problem is that empires, whether it's the British or the French or the Germans in the 19th and 20th centuries, or the American Empire before it became a global empire, always act in their own interests. That's the only reason they're there. It's in their own interest. It's not to do the good. It's a war of national or imperial self-interest. That is why they are there. And the reason why the whole region is dotted with military bases. Why? Because of the oil. And now we have a situation where the United States is bogged down in a war. Several thousand Iraqis have died. Their lives don't seem to matter in this country, but they do matter in that world and the rest of the world. Several hundred American soldiers have died. 3,000 American soldiers have been seriously wounded. 2,000 American soldiers have been withdrawn because of nervous and mental breakdowns, and the level of suicides in returning soldiers is much higher than it was after 5 years of the Vietnam War. That's what this has resulted in. The solution is to stop the occupation, to withdraw the troops, to permit the Iraqi people to determine their own future. They will make their own mistakes, but that is the only way out. What would be the consequences of a U.S. withdrawal in Iraq? This is a very serious question, and it's not an easy one to answer. No one has the exact mechanisms of what will take place after a withdrawal. But what I don't like is to trap the Iraqi people in an occupation till they produce a government which is approved. My own feeling is that you will have a national government created once an occupation ends, possibly even during it. It's not impossible. What Sistani has demanded are elections to a constituent assembly, which is one of the old demands of the French Revolution, and he said that this constituent assembly will then frame a new constitution, which will then be debated. The question is, most of the people the United States is relying on in Iraq probably will not be elected. That's the problem. Prolonging the occupation is going to create a bigger mess, because this is something people tend not to understand, especially in this country, is that most occupied peoples do not like being occupied. I'm sorry, but that's the truth. And so one has to wage a campaign, either now, March the 20th is a good start, against the occupation, and one has to put pressure on the new president, if indeed he is elected, to make sure and to remind such a person that if he is elected, it's because people are fed up with this regime and what it stands for. And that's why they are voting, and not necessarily for that particular person with his record. And a defeat for the Bush administration would be seen globally as a victory. No doubt about it. It may not be. It may simply be, as it probably will, the empire deciding to put its clothes back on. But it would be an important start for building a movement to withdraw the troops from Iraq. Now, the Iraqi people are perfectly capable of determining and deciding their own future. It may not be a future we like, you like, or even I like, but people have to learn through their own mistakes. In the meantime, all the problems of that region, which we said after 9/11 should be solved politically, not militarily, remain a sore. The occupation of Palestine by the Israelis. Add to that the occupation of Iraq by the Anglo-American Expeditionary Force. Is this going to reduce terror in the world? Is this the way you fight a war against terror, by actually making conditions which embitter people even more and drive young people to join those organizations which believe in it? This is not the way to move forward. It's totally counterproductive, and it has already resulted in a debacle in Iraq. This war has been a disaster, and it's therefore incumbent on American citizens, especially in election year, to demand that the occupation is brought to an end.
This has been a Building Bridges, your community and labor report special.